We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode number 90. We're almost at episode 100, Scott. How's it going?
Good, good. 10 more episodes and we get to that big, big century mark. I'm a little bit tired, I must say. We had the writers outing obviously yesterday, and it was a long day. So, bucking up for this and getting ready for it. And then we got the Mariano game later today. So we're actually recording this on Sunday before the Yankee game. So, as for you guys listening, you know when we're speaking. How are you feeling today?
Well, we were debating whether or not we wanted to try and do this in person since we're obviously both in New York this weekend. But after yesterday, where I think it was, 110 degree heat index?
I have no idea.
Everybody was sweating through their shirts by 12:30 in the afternoon. The beer was pouring out of my pores. It was a disgusting situation at Yankee Stadium yesterday. So I am gladly sitting in the air conditioning right now.
Yeah, logistically, it would have been a pain in the ass for us to get together to do this in person. So I'm cool. I'm in my sister's basement right now, recording in her office. So the funny thing is like you go and on days like that when it's so freaking hot and the sun is just crushing you, like me, I burn easily, so I got to put sunscreen on. But that moment you put the sunscreen on, it's like the most disgusting feeling ever because it doesn't absorb. And it's just like a film of just like disgustingness and then suntan lotion on top of it. And you're just a disgusting, greasy, horrible mess.
Yeah, there's two horrible scenarios for suntan lotion. And it's at the beach when you're just rubbing sand into your skin.
Yeah, that's awful too.
And then when you're outside at a baseball game or golfing or something and you're just pouring sweat and you're just rubbing the sweat around.
Yeah, it's bad, but we were able to bear the elements. I know I took many trips up to the Mohegan Sun deck just because there was at least a little bit of a breeze going up there, and just walking around was better than sitting down the entire time. So I think we all took shifts, sitting in the seats and then moving around.
We're going to get into everything. We were there for the entire celebration, even though the Yankees organization said, fans, please be in the seats by 12 noon. And what time did the ceremony start? About
12:40.
So yeah, we had that extra 40 minutes of baking in the sun. Thank you very much, Yankees. We're going to get into all that, obviously, the A-Rod stuff over the past week. Before we do that, though, episode 90, I wanted to give some A-Rod stats out. So I found that his career OPS with the Yankees was an even 900. He did have better OPSs with Seattle and Texas, as you can imagine, since he was a younger player. And he had some of those down years with the Yankees towards the end here. But 12 seasons, 900 career OPS, 351 home runs. And a cool stat about A-Rod is that he's the only player in Major League history to have 150 home runs with three different teams, which is pretty amazing when you think about the level that you have to play in order to achieve 150, especially that he did it with Texas in only three seasons.
Yeah, those Texas years were ridiculous. I mean, the guy was just pouring stupid video game numbers out. So
we know why.
Well, we know exactly why. But you break down the fact that he did do it. He had 150 in that short amount of time is pretty ridiculous.
And he had 1,096 RBIs and 1,580 hits with the Yankees. More crazy numbers. I also saw on Twitter somebody tweeting that not only are there some great stats to go with A-Rod's career, but he is fifth all-time for strikeouts, 2,287.
That's surprising, actually, when I saw that.
So it is surprising, but then you think about the type of hitter that A-Rod is. We've mentioned all the time, he's a guess hitter.
Right.
Obviously, when he was 27 years old, he could guess and then still maybe fall off a breaking ball if he was guessing fastball. And he might not have struck out as much in his younger days. But as he progressed into his career, if he guessed wrong, he was screwed. He was going to strike out. So, yeah, 2,287, four players ahead of him. Sosa, Dunn, Tomey, and Reggie Jackson. All just big, all-or-nothing home run hitters. And then you got A-Rod, who definitely was the best player out of any of those guys. But I guess once you play for so many years, and there was a lot of times, he would only miss one or two games in a season. So he was a durable player. He was playing a lot, usually batting third or fourth, so he was getting up a lot. I guess that's how you rack up the strikeouts.
Yeah, and we're going to see. I think these, as long as longevity is a is still a thing with baseball players moving forward and people are, you know, staying in the game long enough, you're going to see these, the top five, I think, start shifting out, because people are striking out so much more now, it seems like. And, you know, it's so many guys are all or nothing. I feel like they're going to be a lot of records set for strikeouts in seasons coming up in the next 10 years.
We got a guy who's about 6'7" in right field wearing number 99, who is that type of player. And you know what? I don't care, because what he did on Saturday was damn exciting.
Oh my God. It was so much fun. And the other thing, well, you know, I see him, he's definitely worked on that too quite a bit. And you can tell that he's, just from all the scouts and all the coaches talking about him, he's definitely shortened up his swing quite a bit. And you see that batting average climbing up a little bit. So we'll see what he does in the majors. But he definitely showed some really good progress as far as getting on base and cutting down the strikeouts and you know, hitting for average as well in AAA.
Yeah, we're obviously talking about Chase Headley.
But isn't that – yeah.
We were talking about Aaron Judge, and we're gonna mention what we saw while we were there in person. But first, let's talk about all the A-Rod stuff. It was a circus this entire week. Of course, A-Rod, if you've been watching his 22-year career, you just knew it was going to be a circus towards the end. He was not going to go without any controversy like Mariano or Jeter did. I feel that a lot of the circusness, I don't even think that's a word, a lot of the craziness was brought on by the Yankees organization. I think once the announcement happened last Sunday, he had 4 games left on the schedule. I think they could have played him those 4 games and it would have been fine. They could have justified that to fans. They could have justified that to themselves. And I think A-Rod would have been fine with it. And there would not have been the shitstorm that happened in the media, which was they sat him those first 2 games in Boston. And the entire news surrounding the Yankees was, why isn't A-Rod playing? And I just think that it was clear that the Steinbrenners or Cashman or a combo of both were telling Girardi, you're not going to play this guy these last 4 games. Because I honestly believe, as much crap as Girardi gets, he's a player's manager. Right. He's not going to outright embarrass one of his players, especially somebody like A-Rod, who has been in the league for a long time. I think him and A-Rod have a very good relationship. I think that he would not have a job. I'm talking about Girardi, would not have a job if it weren't for Alex Rodriguez in 2009, carrying the team to the championship. I think he would never go out and outright embarrass a player. That just does not seem like Girardi to me.
Well, and I think a lot of it, too, was because he put his foot in his mouth during the press conference, and I think that was one of the big problems, is that when Girardi went out and said that, hey, I'm going to play this guy as much as Alex wants to play, and then you see him not in the lineup or, you know, not even coming in as a pinch hitter in situations in those first 2 games, then that's also news, because Girardi is backtracking from what he said. And then he literally backtracks for what he said, saying, oh, I got caught up in the emotion of it. And, you know, I didn't mean it. Oops.
Do you realize?
Can I take that back?
That's honestly as ridiculous a statement as Terry Collins saying that for all he knew, Jay Bruce was fast. Do you remember that from last weekend when he didn't pinch run for Jay Bruce? And obviously Jay Bruce is a new player on the Mets. So he's like, right. Yeah, well, he could be fast. I don't know. He's not my guy.
We haven't seen him.
Yeah, we haven't seen him.
I don't know when I look at him, he looks, I'm still confused.
Even though there's technology nowadays that probably tells StatCast information on every player's speed around, you know, first to third in Major League Baseball.
You think Terry Collins is using technology to evaluate anybody?
But really, the bottom line,
he's an old school baseball guy.
It's a ridiculous statement for Terry Collins to make, and he got killed for it. And to be honest, that was a ridiculous comment for Joe Girardi to make. I got caught up in the emotions. So you're telling me that they went into that Sunday press conference and did not have a plan for A-Rod's last 4 games? That seems ridiculous to me.
Well, I don't think they did. I don't think Girardi did.
Okay, well, that's the thing. Steinbrenner and Cashman had a plan. They just didn't tell Girardi about it.
It seems like Girardi was out of the loop on a lot of the plans until they were actually set in motion. That's what it sounded like. At least Girardi, that's the way it kind of came across when I heard him talking. But, you know, he wanted nothing to do with that. In all honesty, like, it was a very uncomfortable situation for him. You could tell all over his face how uncomfortable it was. I mean, look at the guy's press conference afterwards. I mean, he was bawling because of how badly he felt about the whole situation and how the media was taking him. People were booing Girardi and there was an outcry against Girardi, and he's like, wait, but, you know, and it went all on him, and it's unfortunate the way it went down.
Of a baseball manager.
Yeah,
that's the territory.
But that's the thing. Like, he doesn't want, he wants to be a baseball manager. He doesn't want to deal with that crap. Like, this is the last thing a guy wants to deal with is this off the field nonsense.
Because he said this week, it's not in my job description to manage farewell tours. Even though he managed Mariano and Jeter's farewell tours pretty heavily in those two seasons.
Again, we had this conversation yesterday, and I actually was in the car for a long time on Friday, and I called into XM Radio. So if anybody listens to XM Radio and they hear Scott from New York talking about this, that was me, because I was getting so angry, and I had to sit on hold for like an hour. I didn't care. I was driving, so I was sitting on hold waiting. And
I'm sure your wife loved that.
We actually had to take separate cars.
Oh,
so
okay.
I was alone, but yeah, I went on a rant about this. The fact that it was driving me nuts how people are comparing the fact that, how Girardi handled Alex Rodriguez's last moments with Jeter or Mariano's last moments. Because they're not even remotely in the same ballpark of scenarios. First of all, you have Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera, who have earned the type of clout with an organization. They've won, multiple championships, obviously. They have historic careers. They've both done things the right way, always have acted, as gentlemen and the right way. And then you have Alex Rodriguez, who is, we all know the story. I don't need to go into the entire thing with him, but he is who he is. And the fact that the baseball situation was extremely different, because when Jeter and Mariano were leaving, first of all, there was no heir apparent behind Jeter. Eduardo Nunez was not the next shortstop. He had a million opportunities, did not take advantage of it. So there was nobody, he wasn't blocking anybody's path. He wasn't taking away at bats at that point. But when you look at A-Rod in the situation now, it's very clear where the direction of the team is going, and that he actually is, taking at bats away from people and keeping people off of the roster. So it's an extremely different situation, and I just think Girardi was in such a tough spot. So I can't even like look at the two as remotely close to even being a similar situation. It's apples to oranges to me.
I think that's a good point, but we're not asking Girardi to play A-Rod for the next month and a half. It was four games, 16 at-bats, and in one of those games, a left-handed pitcher was starting. So I really think that all the joke was this whole week was, quote, trying to win ball games, and the Yankees are still trying to win ball games, and people were mocking them for that because they sold their best players at the trade deadline. Thus, you'd think they're no longer trying to win ball games. They're trying to plan for the future and just get this season over with.
So unless you listen to me and then you're just trying to make yourself better.
Who cares if A-Rod plays four more games? You're not really in this playoff race anyway. I know the standings may say something otherwise, but it's 16 at-bats is what we're really talking about. I don't think that is the same thing as playing Derek Jeter every day for the 2014 season.
Well, the funny thing is, the very ironic thing, I guess, when everybody's making fun of that we're just trying to win ball games, the Yankees went 5-1 since
they
the
are actually winning ball games.
And Girardi won ball games with the entire circus going on. So I guess he was doing the right thing, apparently.
2-0 with A-Rod in the lineup, though.
Yeah, and I mean, look at the guy that started as soon as, basically, since the announcement of A-Rod in this whole situation. Aaron Hicks started to become a legit baseball player. Did that happen last week? Because it started to.
Aaron Hicks. Every time there's rumors of younger guys taking his place, he has a nice 4 or 5 game stretch, and then he'll go 0 for his next 14.
Yeah, and who gets screwed? Rob Refsnyder.
So I just think, as we were saying, the whole thing with A-Rod was a complete shit show. There was obviously talks with Steinbrenner and A-Rod, and they said, we don't want you here for the rest of the season. But do you think it would have been really that bad of a scenario if they just said, we're going to play you one or two times a week, you're going to get some pinch hitting opportunities, if you hit, we'll play you more, we're going to just make it until rosters expand, and then we don't have to talk about you taking up a roster spot because rosters are expanding for September 1st. I don't think that would have been really that outside the realm of possibility to handle this A-Rod situation. And I actually think it would have been less embarrassing for A-Rod.
But here's the problem with that. The problem is that this is still a baseball team that is actually playing baseball in the middle of a season. And at that time was what, 3.5, four games out of the wild card. Okay. We know what the team, what it has been for before the trade deadline. But at this point right now, when they're at an opportunity in, within striking distance still, Girardi's still got to do his job. These guys still have to do their job by trying to win ball games and trying to make it to the postseason. As much as we, you know, as the fans look on it and say, you know, that's not a scenario, that's still their job every single day. And the fact of the matter is there are better players, or there were better players in AAA that could help the team now, right now, while they're still in the thick of things. And if they were to wait 3 weeks, you know, the Yankees very well may have been out of it, and you're not pulling guys up that need the at-bats that could actually help the team. It's not only about rebuilding. I understand that it's about rebuilding, and that's absolutely the baseline. But the fact of the matter is, you bring Aaron Judge up, you bring a guy like Tyler Austin up, he's going to help the team now, too. He's going to put up better at-bats than A-Rod and put up better at-bats than Mark Teixeira, even, at first base with Austin. I don't know. I feel like this is a situation now where they're still in striking distance, and they actually do have significant guys that can help.
That's great. And A-Rod's off the team. They released him on Friday night, and they brought up Aaron Judge and Tyler Austin for Saturday morning. It was like Christmas morning when you and I were on our way to the stadium seeing that both of those guys were in the lineup. But I'm talking about for the final four games of A-Rod's career with the Yankees. You're telling me that they couldn't have played him instead of Chase Headley or instead of Aaron Hicks? I think that could have been easily done. Or
yeah,
instead
for
of
the
Brian
last four
McCann.
Games, yeah. That's fine. They could have done something.
Is the last four games. Play A-Rod for those last four games. And I think it would have been, you would have been doing a service to your fans as well. Fans wanted to see A-Rod for those last four games. They didn't want to see Aaron Hicks or Brian McCann get more at-bats.
I don't know. It's tough to say that to Girardi because he's doing what he thinks is right for the baseball team.
And he's TTWBG.
And he's not trying to get hooked up, you know, all in embracing this whole thing, when in reality it was impossible not to. So maybe if he's looking back and saying, well, if I'm going to do this all over again to get caught in the circus, I would just play him. But then he's also looking back. He's like, well, I actually did go 5-1 during those games. So maybe I was doing the right thing. And nobody will remember that. And everybody will just remember what happened on Friday night and then the shift into the new era. And now we're good.
Friday night was classic A-Rod. They pushed the game back a half hour so they could do a little ceremony for him before the game. And it looked like the apocalypse was coming. The sky was pitch black. It was raining. The tarp was on the field. And it was just so poetic for the way A-Rod's career would come to an end, isn't it?
I mean, the funny thing is that it was supposed to rain all day long. And it waited until he was out on the
7:05 p.m.
Yeah, waited until he's out on the field receiving these gifts. And, I mean, even that was cut short because it started pouring on him and he, like, ran into the dugout with his family. So it was unbelievable. It was actually perfect, in my opinion.
And do you remember a couple years ago for Jeter's last game, there was a fear that it was going to rain and the game would be rained out, and it was the most picturesque, beautiful night in the Bronx. It was like 75 degrees with beautiful sunset skies for Jeter's last game.
Yep.
And A-Rod has what looks like the apocalypse is coming. It was hilarious. I tweeted out a picture of the two skies. It was just perfect juxtaposition between A-Rod and Jeter.
And there were some funny things going on Twitter about how all the ghosts at Yankee Stadium and all the great Yankees were just thundering and pouring down on them, like this disagreement.
He handled it well, though. He got a good laugh out of it. They sprinted back into the dugout after he got his jersey. And what did he get, a cake as well?
No, it wasn't a cake. It looked like a cake. It was a base signed by the entire team.
Was it really?
But it looked like Steinbrenner. That's Steinbrenner's daughter, I think, that was bringing it out, right? It looked like she was bringing out a cake. I'm like, why the hell is she bringing out a cake? This is ridiculous.
Hopped up on sugar before the game.
Yeah.
I really thought it was a cake because I actually missed the first. I missed the ceremony because it was four
minutes. It happened
long.
In the blink of an eye.
Right, right. I got back. I put the TV on at about 7:10, and the ceremony was over.
Yeah, no, it was a base that was signed by the Yankees
team.
Got it. But it absolutely looked like a cake. I'm like, as she was walking up, like, why the hell is this woman carrying a cake to him right now?
He had an RBI double in his first at-bat. I'm glad he got a hit and an RBI in his last game. It would have been really sad had he gone 0-4. He looked pretty bad at the plate other than that first at-bat.
Yeah, it's a good thing he got it out of the way in the beginning.
But that's sort of been the way A-Rod's been going over the past month, is he'll have a flash of brilliance where he'll hit a home run, or I'll have a double, or I'll have a really good at-bat where he works a walk, and you're saying, you know, maybe he's not done. But when you only play once every week, it's hard to be consistent. So I really can't blame him for the fact that he looked terrible at the plate. And the way it was shaping up was, I know Stephen Wright got scratched on Thursday, but A-Rod was going to play for the first time in 10 days against a knuckleballer, which would have been really difficult situation for him. When you come off the bench cold, have not started a game since, I believe it was July 30th, and at that point it was, August 9th, and they stick you in, here you go, Stephen Wright, having a fantastic season, who's just thrown junk up there.
Well, it's really a double-edged sword for him, though, because if he's playing more consistently, then his body has the higher percentage of breaking down, and he's taking bad at-bats because he's not feeling well, right? He's tired, or his bones are aching, or his muscles hurt because he's an old man. So it's a really difficult situation to try to manage that, because you got to keep the guy relatively fresh, but then by doing that, he's not getting the at-bats to, you know, get his timing down, get the feel down. And so it was an impossible situation almost for him to succeed.
Don't you find it a little odd that the Yankees released a player who in his final two games batted cleanup in third?
No, I don't.
That's weird.
I guess.
That's most likely never happened in the history of baseball.
That's a good point. It is when you look at where he was batting in the lineup.
They're saying,
but he was just there because he was there.
The whole thing is Girardi saying, we're trying to win ball games. We're putting the best lineup on the field. And then the next day you have the player who you refuse to play because he's not good enough batting fourth and then batting third. It makes no sense.
Look, this is why this week was so ridiculous, because people were just taking everything he was saying in, you know, as scripture, and like, and Girardi just,
I'm not taking the scripture.
No, but Girardi just talked too much. That was the problem. Girardi just talked too much. He just needed to not talk so much, because that's the reason all this got blown out of proportion.
He wasn't doing it
on purpose. He was just, you know, he should have not said the things that he said. And
should have pulled a Marshawn Lynch. I'm just here so I don't get fined.
Exactly. And all of this would have been just fine. No one would have had ammunition against Girardi and then spun it into all these different directions. And that is why this whole thing became, you know, more of what was going on with Girardi and A-Rod, and less about, you know, what was actually happening on the baseball field for baseball reasons.
I was joking on Twitter on Friday night that the Yankees should announce every game as A-Rod's last game, because the stadium was rocking. It was a packed house. The team was playing like it was game one of a playoff series. It was a lot of fun Friday night.
Yeah, it definitely looked like a good atmosphere. And then obviously on Saturday, it was hot as hell, but it was still a good atmosphere. It was fun. It was electric. There was a buzz for sure because of the kids. And we can thank A-Rod for that. So thank you, A-Rod. I really do appreciate you, because you gave me Aaron Judge.
Friday night, A-Rod also played an out at third base in the ninth inning. And I think Girardi wanted to play him for two outs, but A-Rod said he only wanted to play for one out because he was absolutely terrified of making an error, I can imagine.
And I told you at the bar, this was probably my most cynical moment as a fan. You know, I was a little bit, like, part of me was rooting for him to boot a ball, I'm not going to lie.
easy four-hopper to third base and have him just clank off his glove or airmail it.
Yeah, a little part of me wanted that to happen.
You're a son of a bitch, man.
Yeah, I know.
That's something I would say.
I know. I guess that's just my disdain for A-Rod, and just the, it would have been like, okay, here you go. Oh, that's a shame. It's kind of like, you know, just all the mannerisms that put him into his own little category of his own little A-Rod bubble.
It would have been nice. It would have been classic A-Rod going out like that.
Yeah.
He would have laughed, but he would have been mortified.
Yeah. It would have been like, oh, the Boston, like his comments about Boston when he was there in the crowd were just hysterical to me. It's such an A-Rod comment. Oh, the crowd was kind of dead, and then when I came up, they were very lively. I really appreciate them. Very lively. Like, it's just it's shut up, dude.
We want A-Rod at Fenway. We want A-Rod at Fenway Park. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. That's how he'll tell the story, yeah.
Final thing about A-Rod, and then we are literally turning the page just as the Yankees did.
Yes.
The big question, was that his final game as a professional baseball player?
Yeah, I believe it is. I'm with the thinking that he and Hal Steinbrenner have a handshake behind the scenes saying that, hey, we're going to release you. We're going to give you this opportunity to come back and help with the kids. And you're going to have a place in the Yankee organization in some capacity. And that is going to be contingent on you doing what you said you were going to do, and as far as an advisory role or what, you know, whatever they want to call it, for next year with the kids. But this is going to be your last game. We're not going to call it a retirement, because we're going to pay you next year, and you can't call it a retirement because you wouldn't get the money. But we're going to unconditionally release you. And on this handshake, you're not playing next year. And I think that's what happened.
why would Hal Steinbrenner really care if A-Rod plays next year?
It's not. I think it's because they're doing all this fanfare and they're doing all these things about him, A-Rod's last game. I mean, you saw all the merchandise out there.
Right, you can still do that and then have him sign with the Marlins or name your team next year.
It kind of taints it. I think it kind of taints it. And it's obvious that he's not a player that could contribute on a – I don't think he's going to get signed purely because he's not a good baseball player anymore either.
Well, I think a team would certainly sign him for the fact that he's four home runs away from 700. And if you're the Miami Marlins – you put A-Rod on that team, you're selling out instantly.
Fine, but
they have 20,000 people in the stands max. No, he doesn't play defense, but he could pinch hit.
I guess that's a tough situation. Again, then you're in a situation like Girardi had, and you're wasting two spots when you pinch hit for him. But
rosters expand in September.
Oh, so you're saying at the end September this year?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't see that happening. I honestly think he wants to retire as a Yankee. I think that's important to him. He doesn't need the money. He knows he's not a great ball player anymore. Like, why is he going to come back and then suck on another uniform? It's just going to go down as a terrible.
I think he really wants
terrible mark at the end of his
runs.
Career.
He really wants 700 home runs, which is kind of stupid when you think about it, because that number
it means nothing.
Now means nothing with all the
it
steroids.
Means nothing.
Stuff.
That's why I don't think it's that big of a deal anymore.
Well,
because
I think
it doesn't mean anything.
It's a big deal to him.
If you were to get to Ruth, that's something. But
why,
just getting 700,
I think, because he'd be the fourth member of the 700 home run club.
But nobody would freaking acknowledge it. That's the thing. Nobody acknowledges
these
home
runs. I honestly think as we get further and further away from the steroid era, the more we're going to acknowledge these players of this.
But don't you think A-Rod is the guy that cares about that 700? But Alex Rodriguez is like, okay, I'm good now. I've grown up.
So now he's got a split personality thing going on.
Yes, exactly. No, A-Rod is just the old. It's not split anymore. It's A-Rod is like the.
So A-Rod was the guy who kissed the mirror and
yes.
had the centaur photo and
yes.
and went shirtless in Central Park.
Yes.
But Alex Rodriguez is the guy who is mentoring young players and had
yes.
the A-Rodicence and won the 2009 World Series.
That's it, and gets cakes from Steinbrenner that look like bases. Yes,
I smell like a Netflix original miniseries.
Yeah, it's the alter ego
of A-Rod. Yeah,
yeah, it's the
a good
previous
evil, like
the
a
previous
Spider-Man 3, a Spider-Man 3 situation.
So that's why I think that right now the most important thing to him is securing the relationship with the New York Yankees. Because honestly, let's look at this. If he were to go to another team right now, he's not going to make a lot of fans at that new team, right? Where are all of his fans right now? They're all in the Yankee organization. They're all Yankee fans, right?
I think
nobody else likes A-Rod.
Florida Marlins are the one wild card team. I know it's the National League. If it was an American League team, I'd say almost definitely he's going to sign
there. I would
there.
Agree with that, but it is a National League
but
team.
He's from Miami. He grew up in Miami. He's got roots there. I know he has some charitable organizations down there.
He acts like he went to the it was a hurricane.
Right. No, but he has fans in Miami. I think that's legitimate.
Okay, fine. I'll give you that. But you can't dismiss the fact that it is a National League team, and there's too many baseball realistic implications. And I haven't looked at the National League standings in a long time. But aren't the Marlins kind of in it still?
Yeah, they're ahead of the Mets. They're right in the wild card race.
So why are you going to bring that in to a team that's
veteran
a very
leadership.
Young team?
Veteran leadership
with Barry Bonds as the coach. I mean,
Don Mattingly.
Oh, come on. So you're going to put Barry Bonds and A-Rod on the same team now?
Yeah.
That's come on.
Oh my God, that's a Balco
I didn't
wet
even
dream.
Think, I didn't even think about that until just now. I'm like, there's no way this can happen.
Balco
so, no.
would instantly open up a plant in South Beach.
So this is another scenario why A-Rod won't do it. He won't do it because it's just going to bring bad PR back to him. It's going to bring back the steroid conversation because he's going to be back there with Bonds.
I think
it's a PR nightmare again.
If A-Rod is more worried about his stats and 700, he will sign again.
But
if he's more worried about going out on a high note with the Yankees organization,
yes.
then he won't sign elsewhere. I don't know what's more important to him at this point. I honestly think, I know everything he said in the media was that this was a great send-off for me. I'm so happy. He put a smile on his face. He said he has a good relationship with the Steinbrenners. But I got to imagine he was a little bit embarrassed by how this last week turned out.
The thing is that no, I don't think people are going to look back. I mean, when history looks back at this, you know, a year later, a few months even later, we're going to forget a lot of the undertone a lot of the conversations that happened with Girardi and him not playing, I don't think that's going to be part of the conversation. I think the part of the conversation is going to be that A-Rod, was unconditionally released. He had a ceremony at Yankee Stadium. He went off as a New York Yankee to a standing ovation from the crowd, and then the new era started. I don't think anybody's going to remember all this other crap. If you think about the way history remembers things, it doesn't remember the subtle conversations, the undertones of a lot of the situations. They remember the grand things that happen. And I think that's how it's going to be remembered in history.
Yeah. August 12th, though, it's a weird thing to see this happen in the middle of August. And the quote he had with Ken Rosenthal after the game, I don't know if you were watching the Yes or the Fox broadcast. I put the Fox broadcast on for postgame because I knew he was going to be interviewed with Rosenthal. And he asked him, or he said, "You're leaving this team in the middle of a pennant race." And Alex just kind of, you could see his face drop. And he said, "Yeah, this is when it gets fun, but I'm going home." So I just felt bad. That's all. I just felt like he was sad, not happy.
That's fine. Oh, poor A-Rod. Poor billion-dollar A-Rod. Go sat on his yacht and his mansion.
Hey,
and
for all
whatever.
The money he has in the bank, he is not – he's a tortured soul, clearly. He's not a beloved person, and that's all he ever wanted in life was to be beloved.
He
wanted to be loved too much when he came to New York, and he just wasn't. So he's one of the best baseball players of all time, all the talent in the world, millions upon millions of dollars. But at the end of the day, I think he was unhappy a lot of times when he went to bed, which sucks.
I agree with that because I think he was very hard on himself and he made a lot of bad decisions. And I think he was listening to too many people that were giving him bad advice. And you're right. He wanted to be beloved by everybody. That was his, I think that was one of the most important things for him, was to be loved by the fans. And he just never got there. You know, he had it in Seattle for a little while. That's where he had it. And then, after the comeback, I think a lot of New York actually did take him onto that. And that's why I think he's going to leave as a New York Yankee, because he is in good graces right now with the Yankees organization, with the Yankees fans as a whole, and that's important to him. And I think you're making your own case for why he's going to leave, because that is important to him. And I think today and tomorrow and the next day, he can finally rest a little bit more easy, because he does have a good perception leaving at this point. He comes back and sucks and just goes back. It's going to be very obvious that he's only going back for the 400 for the four home runs that don't matter to anybody. Then I think there's going to be a lot of negative connotation. You go back to Miami with Barry Bonds, more steroid talk. There's so many bad situations to me that can happen on a PR side that it's just not worth it. I don't think it's worth it to him at this point in his career. It's, in his life, really.
A-Rod's been talking.
He is a sad guy. It's a sad situation. I agree with that because of the potential.
Yeah. A-Rod's been talking the talk. Every interview he does, he said, "I made a million mistakes. I put these fans through a lot, and I'm just trying to redeem myself." Let's see if he walks the walk and actually goes out like this with, I think, like you are saying, maybe his head will be held high when we think about it a year down the road.
Yeah.
Let's see if he walks the walk after he talks the talk.
And as a direct comparison, if you want to be upset about A-Rod being sad and the press conference and all that, go watch Prince Fielder's press conference.
Yeah.
That was heartbreaking. That was sad, because that's a guy who, relatively in the prime of his career still, I'd say, probably towards the end of it.
He was more of a singles hitter at this point.
But towards the end, I think a lot of that had to do with injury. But
the neck, yeah.
Yeah, so the fact that this guy had to retire early, forced because of injury, that and just the way that he was with his kids up at the podium and talking about how he's going to miss his teammates and the clubhouse. I mean, the guy's been in the clubhouse since he was a little kid with his dad. And I mean, how apropos to end your career with the exact same amount of home runs as your father. I mean, that's crazy.
Your father that you hate.
Yeah. Are they still on bad
terms? Enemies. Yeah. Cecil stole millions of dollars from Prince.
I don't know the whole backstory. I don't remember. I remember hearing about it, but I don't remember. So if we see Cecil on Monday night, we can't ask him about that?
No. I would not ask. I would not ask Cecil about that.
Or maybe we do.
I feel like Cecil could kick our ass. All right. So I'm sure it's not the last time we'll talk about A-Rod, but let's briefly turn the page. And we woke up Saturday morning. We were on our way to the dugout very early in the morning. And I see some vague tweets that Aaron Judge is getting called up, but the Yankees have not officially announced anything. And then the Yankees PR tweets out the lineup, and number 99, Aaron Judge, is batting eighth and starting right field. And I almost shit my pants. I was so happy because I believe you and I wishfully joked about a month ago that maybe Aaron Judge would make his major league debut on August 13th when we were at the stadium. And holy crap, it actually happened. I'm so happy we were there for that game. I will sit through that 110-degree heat every time because that was a very exciting debut for both Austin and Aaron Judge.
Yeah, and yesterday when we heard Tyler Austin was coming up, I was like, oh, that seals it. That's it. Judge is not going to be there, and I was disappointed. And I didn't even know because I wasn't checking my phone when I was on the way. I was at the bar. And you guys got there, and was telling me that Judge, because I wasn't even looking at my phone. So I didn't even know it until you guys told me. I was very excited. That's awesome.
So this is what happened, because Evaldi's injury on Thursday night kind of screwed up plans. I guess it was originally in the plan for Aaron Judge to be called up Saturday after A-Rod was released, but Cashman didn't announce anything because after Evaldi got hurt, the Yankees had to bring up more pitchers. They sent down Ref Snyder because they fried their bullpen on Thursday night. They used 9 pitchers. So Cashman was planning on keeping Judge in the minors for a few more days until the bullpen recovered, but Friday night, Brett Gardner got hit by a pitch on his foot, and I guess he's a little bruised, so they didn't want to start him on Saturday, so the Yankees had to make a last-minute call and needed an outfielder, and Aaron Judge was the call-up. So it's kind of funny how things worked out. Thank God Brett Gardner got hit on the foot, I guess.
You know, if you just look at the whole situation, and all the elements around this weekend and what's going on with A-Rod's final game, then him being off of the roster completely, and then Saturday, the celebration of the 1996 World Series champions with all those guys coming back into town, being announced. It was awesome. It was cool to see all those guys back. And then Aaron Judge, Tyler Austin come up and hit home runs in their major league debuts, in their major league first at-bats, back-to-back. Get out of here.
First time in Major League history that's ever happened.
It's such a clean ending and a clean new beginning for this franchise right now. It really is. It's unbelievable. You look back and 20 years to the day where the 1996 team started a dynasty, and they did it in the way that the Yankees are building their team now, through the farm system and through a core group of minor leaguers, and then supplying, you know, filling in holes with major league free agents. And that's the way that they're going to be doing it in the next, you know, however long. That's the plan right now. And Gene Michael must have been like, hey guys, remember me? Hey, what's going on? Remember what I did 20 years ago? It worked really well. Maybe we should do that again. And that's exactly what's going down right now. And the funny thing is if you look back, we have the, on Bronx Pinstripes, we have the Relive 1996 series that we've been doing from the second half. Rich Kaufman's been putting up most of the articles about the recaps of every single game. And if you go back and you look at the game from yesterday, 20 years ago, the Yankees won 8-4. And what happened yesterday? The Yankees won 8-4. There's just too many things paralleling. It's unbelievable. History is absolutely repeating itself right now, and it's on path to start the next great Yankee squad. And I'm so excited.
So batting 6th, 7th, and 8th in the order on Saturday was Gary Sanchez, Tyler Austin, and Aaron Judge. It was awesome to see those three guys back-to-back, but let's talk about Austin and Judge's first Major League at-bats. You and I were standing on the Mohegan Sun sports deck trying to get out of the sun when Austin was at-bat, and you and I were just casually talking, and Austin hits the ball right down the right field line. It just hits the top of the wall and gets out. First Major League home run, and at that point, I'm extremely happy for Tyler Austin, but at the same time, I'm thinking, damn, he's going to show up Aaron Judge in his first game. No, everyone was just looking forward to Aaron Judge, and boom, Tyler Austin's going to steal the spotlight. So you and I go to the very edge of the railing at the Mohegan Sun Sports Bar. Aaron Judge is up. He had a good at-bat. I don't know exactly what the count was, but he just hits this absolute missile right at us, and you can hear it throughout the stadium. It was like a loud pop.
Yeah,
and you and I were each trying to video it. Neither of our videos ended up saving for whatever reason.
Right.
But I found on the replay, and I slowed down and I paused it, and you can actually blurry, but you can see us jumping up and down and throwing our arms in the air when Aaron Judge's home run is sailing over the center field fence. And you and I couldn't see it from our vantage point, but if you see on the side replay, that ball hit at the very top of the glass in center field.
I
thought it hit at the bottom. That thing was a line drive off the top of the glass in center field.
Yeah.
That is an absolute moon bomb. 446 feet, if it weren't for that pesky glass in center field, it would have gone more. 108.8 exit velocity off the bat. I mean, everything that you heard about this guy, he has unbelievable power. He's a massive human being, 6 foot seven, 270 pounds. He does not look like a baseball player. At one point in the game, you turned to me and you said, why the hell is Aaron Judge playing baseball? Why didn't he play basketball? Or why isn't he a tight end? Because he looks like a fish out of water as far as body type on the baseball field. But his tools are all there. He made a great running catch in right field. He went first to third on a base hit during the game. Obviously, you saw him get another single and the absolute blast to center field. So it's amazing to watch this guy because you just don't see somebody of that stature on the baseball field every day.
Yeah, you'd think at some point like a coach would have been like, we're going to move you now. You're not going to be playing baseball so much anymore. And would have, you know, gotten him over to start concentrating on football or basketball. More football than basketball because, I mean, 6'7" is tall, but basketball, there's guys that big. But for, you know, I mean, he looks like a tight end. He does. He's a giant dude.
Size of Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, he's huge. So him playing baseball, it's pretty unbelievable that was the sport that he excelled at the most, I guess, and that was the one he stuck with because it goes against everything when you look at him. And I'm sure you hear a lot of those stories with guys who are in the NFL right now who played baseball, were probably pretty good athletes, but then just decided to start focusing on football for, you know, a lot of reasons, you know, to get into schools and things like that. So he's definitely an interesting character when you think about that. And the fact that he's got that raw power, it's just unbelievable. And one of my favorite things that I'll never forget was when he came back out into right field after he hit that home run, and the bleachers, everybody out there, we were all going nuts for the dude. And you could just see like this like little child grin on his face, and he did like a little fist bump, a bump with his hand and the mitt, and you could just tell how pumped up this dude was. Like he was like ridiculously excited, and he was trying to hold it in, but he just couldn't. So it's just a lot of fun to see him succeed in the way he did, and then just kind of really take it all in. And he knows, I think he really gets it. And I think this next wave of guys get it on their position in the organization and with this franchise right now. I feel like these guys, and I've talked about this before, how they've all kind of come up together. A lot of them have played in AA and in AAA together, and they're kind of the next wave. And you know, we have more guys that have been added to that with trades. But the majority of these guys have played together for a long time, for 2-3 years. And you see Sanchez coming up and working with some of the younger pitchers too. It's just going to help. And I think these guys are going to be like, look, this is our time now. This is going to be our team. Let's roll with it. And I think they're embracing that. And I love it. I think it's so exciting.
And to your point about these young guys embracing it and playing together, James Caprillion tweeted about both Austin and Judge's home runs. Clint Frazier tweeted about the home runs. So it's just fun to see these guys supporting one another. And you could just tell, like you said, they all want to be on this roster together and they want to make the Yankees great again. And not to steal a line, but it's just so great to see. And the best part for me was that Brian Cashman's quote was, he's not in the big leagues to sit. He's here to play every day, talking about Aaron Judge.
Yeah, so amazing. So awesome. It really is. Just like same sentiments, exact same type of line was said with Gary Sanchez. These guys are here to play. They're here to get at bats. They're here to get some good work in the major league so that next year, none of this is new and these guys can just, you know, hit a stride from the very beginning.
We also didn't talk about Gary Sanchez. We haven't had a chance to talk about his first home run at Fenway Park. Another absolute bomb to center field off the back wall at Fenway Park. So when you think of Judge and Sanchez's power, and if they're going to continue to develop, but that's power, that's elite power that we just saw out of Judge and Gary Sanchez. So extremely excited about those two guys.
Well, yeah, and then you throw in a guy like Greg Bird with that swing to right field, and while he's not going to be probably 3-4, but he's I mean that's a great 5-6 guy, right?
He might project to be more of a an average doubles gap hitter, so he could certainly project to be a 3 hitter.
Yeah, maybe. The thing is the Yankee Stadium, and it's absolutely, he's perfect for it because while he doesn't have like tremendous power, the stadium is perfect for his type of swing and his power. And you're going to definitely see a jump in, you know, in slugging percentage because of, you know, the home games and how he projects at the stadium. So it's really a great fit. And I mean, Aaron Judge just has power everywhere. So this dude is just a new level of excitement.
Can't wait. It's one of those things that, now I'm looking forward to every Yankees game again.
Yeah. And just, I think that's the underlying theme for everybody, right? Like, everybody's excited for this.
More so than the fact that they are actually in the wild card race, because they went 5-1 over this last week. They took 2 out of 3 last weekend versus Cleveland, who's the best team in the American League. They took 2 out of 3 at Fenway Park against Boston. And they've at least taken 2 out of 3 against Tampa. We don't know what's going to happen on Sunday. But they're 3.5 games out of the wild card. I still have a hard time saying they're in it because they have a lot of teams to jump over. Houston, Detroit, Boston, and Seattle are all ahead of them. And they play Boston 7 more times and they play Seattle 3 more times. But they don't play Houston or Detroit again. So they can't. They don't have the head-to-head matchups versus those teams in order to beat them. 7 games against Boston could come in handy, but it's going to be really hard to go 6-1 in those games, and that's probably what it's going to take in order for them to overtake Boston. So I have a little bit hard time saying they're back in it at this point, but I don't even care because what we're watching, these young guys on the field, is more exciting to me than anything else.
Well, but that's the thing, though. Because of the – I mean, I understand that there's these teams in front of them, but these guys are – they're playing it with a different type of swagger at this point, just because the new kids are up. I feel like there's just that rejuvenation, and you know, this is exactly what I predicted. This is exactly what I predicted. I knew that the exuberance would come in and kind of light a fire. And I'm expecting not only for these guys to come up, and they're going to struggle at times, no doubt. But I think that the veterans, like the guys like Ellsbury, the guys like Headley, even Didi and Castro, are going to be playing with a different type of emotion, I feel like, and just a different type of confidence that's going to make this team as a whole play a lot better and more consistent.
Maybe they have to play for their jobs a little bit more.
No, they absolutely have to. I mean, look at the farm system. It's stacked. And if it's not a job here, it's a job somewhere. So these guys have to produce. And this is it's just an interesting dynamic of what's happening in the Yankees team right now. The biggest thing for me is if the pitching can hold up, because they're battered right now. I mean, they're an injured pitching staff. And if they can go in and pitch to the point, I think the offense is going to be a hell of a lot better than we've seen all year, at least more consistent.
Yeah, the pitching staff just lost Eovaldi with the same injury issue that he had at the end of last year. Yeah. That scares me because right. When it happens 2 years in a row and he had an MRI and they're being pretty vague on what the injury actually is, I kind of have a bad feeling about Tommy John surgery. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's on the horizon. And if it's not, the other thing that's, I would say, I would put it at like 85% on the horizon, that he's going to the bullpen. I don't think he's going to be, yeah. If he continues to have this, he can't be a starting pitcher because you can only pitch half of a year. So right. What's the point of that?
And he was a 200 inning guy when he was in Florida.
Yeah. So, I mean, this may be a move where they're putting, you know, if they deem that his elbow cannot take this type of work, or if it's been overworked in the past, because he did have Tommy John surgery when he was in high school. And the fact that, you know, maybe his arm is not just, he can't handle being a starter anymore and putting these types of innings on there. This is a guy that I think could absolutely project into the bullpen and maybe even be more effective. I think he could be an effective guy with the, you know, with this type
with
of stuff
that
he has.
Fastball, yeah. And but then you're running into a situation is, who do they put in the starting rotation? Maybe they try and convert Warren back next year. I guess that's a problem for down the road.
Yeah, I don't think of all these coming back this year. I think they're going to show. I mean, no matter what, even if he doesn't get surgery,
I'm talking about 17.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, someone will come in. I don't know. They'll figure that out, I guess.
Also, Severino was briefly sent down after his start in Boston, which was not very good. But he had to be called back up, obviously, because of all the
they need arms.
They needed a starting pitcher. Severino had such a good relief appearance against the Mets 2 weeks ago. And then his start in Boston, he was okay in the first couple innings. But again, that breaking ball, he could not throw his breaking ball to get an out. It was either up in the zone or it was flat. And Red Sox hitters took advantage of it. Benintendi, who is already looking like he's going to be a Yankees killer, had a few hits off of him, almost a home run. I thought it was a home run, that whole controversy off the yellow line in center field. But it was really a discouraging thing to see Severino struggle that badly. But I was still pissed off the Yankees sent him down, because I want them to work through his stuff in the major leagues. He has shown time and time again he can dominate AAA hitting. What good is it going to do him to go back down and face AAA hitting? He needs to figure it out at the major league level. We need to know if he can pitch in the 2017 rotation. And the best way to figure that out is to let him pitch for the next month and a half in the major leagues.
Yeah, I mean, I want him with, you know, when he's working on this stuff too, I would prefer him to be with Larry Rothschild and not down in AAA. I would prefer, you know, have the major league coaches around him and trying to work on things. And I think the big pitch that Girardi was talking about, like, he had the two pitches, and if one of them doesn't work, then he's in trouble. So he needs that third pitch as a starting pitcher, especially when you get to the third time around with the rotation. And the changeup was the one that they were talking about, where he really needs to start throwing that, needs to get confidence in that changeup and throw it down in the zone. Because when you have that, you go around the batting lineup for the third time, you need that third pitch, especially if one of your first two is not working too, you know, is not great that day. So
I believe it was Cone on the broadcast talking about a lot of times young pitchers get scared to throw their changeup. Yeah. Because they're afraid to leave it up in the zone, so they just don't even throw it. If the first couple, say he throws three in the first two innings and they're not good, he'll abandon it for the game. And Cone has said that's the worst thing a young pitcher can do, is absolutely abandon a pitch.
And I have to imagine the changeup is probably one of the harder pitches to get a really good feel for.
Oh, yeah, just it's a total feel pitch.
Yeah, it's not the most natural way to, you know, because you got to hold the ball so deep in the hand that it's a tough one to feel and to locate, I think, if you're not comfortable with it. And I mean, I could see how that would go down in the mentality of a young pitcher, but he's got to work through that. And I think he really does. That's going to be a crucial pitch for him to get control of it and to get really confident with that, so that he does have that third pitch. And, you know, with the electric fastball that he has, that changeup just makes it so much more important that he throws that pitch, because it's such a great playoff of each other. It really, really works well.
Yeah, if he's pitching for Scranton, he doesn't need the changeup to be successful.
Right, right.
So what good is it going to do him? He can get by with fastball slider for seven innings in AAA. He can't do that in the major leagues.
Well, you got to believe, though, if he's in AAA, they're going to make him throw the changeup at that time.
But even if he's throwing lousy changeups, they might not hit him. There's a huge difference between dominating AAA hitters and facing major league hitters.
But I know, but I don't think the Yankees are going to be looking as much at the results of who's hitting what. The fact that what they're going to be looking at is how the pitches are and where the pitches are and what the pitch is doing. I'm like, if a guy doesn't hit it, that's not going to mean much.
He had good results in the last 3 months in Scranton. So
yeah, I just don't know how much he was actually. Hopefully, they're, you know, if I don't know if they were having him throw it at that point. Who knows?
All right, before we wrap this episode up, let's get our thoughts. I want to get your thoughts on the 96 championship celebration. We kind of touched on it, that it was an oven out there in the bleachers. They started it about a half hour late. The stands were maybe, what do you figure, 65 to 75% full?
But yeah, I mean, if you look anywhere outside the down.
It's the heat.
Yeah, there were a lot of people there. They were still up in the concourse and in the clubs. Yeah.
It was cool. That's the first reunion ceremony thing I've ever been to. I'd never been to an old timers day or anything like that, so I was really excited about going, because just to see all those guys, I mean, the 96 team is the team I grew up with, so obviously it was awesome to see those guys back. I don't know, what do you think the loudest ovations were? To me, they were obviously Jeter, Mariano, but I think Paul O'Neill got one of the loudest ovations.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think O'Neill got a big one. I think Posada's wasn't as big, just because he was the first guy to come out. So I think that, you know, the crowd was kind of getting into it.
Well, because Posada wasn't really part of that team, really. He was on the September roster, but he didn't play down the stretch in 96. He
had a few at-bats. There was not much.
Right. So that wasn't really his championship, but they invited him back because obviously he's the core four.
Right. Well, I mean, I think the crowd, you hit it on the head. I mean, Jeter was by far the biggest one. Everybody went bonkers for Jeter. Mariano was a big one. And then O'Neill, I think, was the third biggest one. I think Cone got a good ovation, too. Because you see those guys still around.
O'Neill's one of those players that I just feel like he gets more popular every year.
Yeah.
I think because he's pretty entertaining in the broadcast on Yes Network.
Right.
And I think people, you know, anytime you see a highlight of O'Neill, he's always going crazy. I don't know if you watched, after I got home last night, I was pretty jazzed up, so I watched some of the highlights, and they had Bernie in the booth for an inning, and he was talking about how O'Neill was just so intense as a player, and he just, like, wished he would calm down half the time, and O'Neill was talking about how Bernie was asleep half the time and didn't seem like he was fired up enough, so it was just funny, the juxtaposition between those two guys. But I think fans hear stories of Paul O'Neill and how intense he was, and it's hard not to love somebody who is not only intense, but also succeeds and wins. I mean, that's the ultimate combination.
Well, yeah, and it's relatable, right? Because it's like a blue collar type of attitude with that, and the fans obviously, that's the one they can relate to the most. And he kind of seemed like that kind of guy. He felt like a blue collar type guy who would go out, work his butt off, and was super passionate about and cared, you know, probably more than anybody, or at least that's what it looked like. And I think that fans definitely react to that well.
Yeah, there was a point in the ceremony, though, when they started getting to some of the backup players and the bullpen guys where it was kind of a lull and everyone was just having heat stroke. But then they ended it with, you know, Andy Pettit and David Cone and obviously Mariano Rivera. Wasn't Mariano the last one?
No, Wetland
was the last one, right? I really thought they were going to do something corny where they would like reenact the last out of the game or have a horse trot on the field and have Wade Boggs trot around the stadium. I thought that would have been cool.
Yeah, but it was the introductions. They all went out to their positions that was it, really. I thought some of them were going to talk.
I thought at least one would talk.
I thought Jeter would talk.
Yeah, or who do you think? I mean, Jeter, obviously, but who do you think was the leader of that team? Maybe Cone or O'Neill?
I'd say O'Neill was definitely one of the bigger leaders, and then
Cone as well. I just figured maybe one of those guys would have at least say 30 seconds to a minute worth of stuff, just thank you to the fans. But
yeah, or Tino. Tino was definitely a big leader in that clubhouse,
right? Bernie also said on the broadcast, I thought it was funny. He's like, thank God I had the shortest walk to my position.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Bernie's packed on the pounds.
He's playing guitar, man. He's relaxing. He's chilling. He's sitting on a stool.
So before we leave, we have that Steiner Sports event on Monday night. So definitely look out for some audio and possibly some video and some content that we'll be tweeting out. Oh, also, if you want to watch the Periscope of the 1996 celebration, Scott, you tweeted out from Bronx Pinstripes, right?
Yeah, it's on there. It's on our Periscope too. We pretty much had the our phones on the entire time, so that whole thing is recorded.
And Aaron Judge's first roll call is also on our Facebook page and on our Twitter page, so definitely check that out. But keep an eye out on the website for any content about that Steiner Sports event. We are, you know, possibly going to be speaking to some of the 96 players. I don't want to jinx anything, so I don't want to mention any names yet, but definitely looking forward to that. Scott, you have any last words?
Future's here, baby. That's it. That's what this is. And hopefully these guys can light a spark and make a run. It'd be fun to watch. Definitely be fun to watch.
All right. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.